Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a concept called concentration of measure. Now that might sound pretty abstract, maybe locked away in a math textbook somewhere.
It can sound that way, yeah.
But it's actually a really fundamental idea about how probability works, how it behaves.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like this. If you have, say, a whole bunch of possibilities, and you find that at least half of them are kind of clustered around a certain outcome.
Right.
Concentration of measure tells us that pretty much all the other possibilities are likely to be reasonably close to that cluster, too.
Exactly. The interesting bit, really, is figuring out how close, how quickly does that probability drop off?
Precisely.
Yeah.
And while the mass behind it can get, you know, quite involved, the core idea has surprising reach. It pops up in areas like understanding the reliability of financial market predictions.
Yeah, stochastic finance uses these ideas. And statistical model selection, too, helping figure out the best way to analyze data.
And I think you mentioned randomized algorithms as well.
Absolutely. Making sure those clever algorithms we use in computer science are actually efficient. The fact that probabilities often concentrate like this gives us a powerful foundation in lots of complex fields.
So our goal today is to explore some new research that takes this idea and pushes it into an even more intricate area. Stochastic partial differential equations, mm-hmm. SPDEs.
Mm-hmm, SPDEs, which are a whole different beast.
We've got a study here that dives into something called Talleyrand concentration inequalities, sometimes called transportation information inequalities, specifically for these SPDEs.
Right, and these Talleyrand inequalities, they're a really elegant way to connect two important concepts about probability distributions.
Okay.
One is the Wasserstein distance. You can think of that as a measure of how much sort of effort or cost it takes to reshape one probability distribution into another.
Like if you have two piles of sand, that analogy.
Exactly like that. If you want to transform one pile into the exact shape of the other, the Wasserstein distance quantifies the most efficient way to move the sand. Minimum effort transport.
Okay, got it. And the other concept?
The other is relative entropy, which basically tells us how different two probability distributions are from an information theory perspective. It measures how much information you lose if you use one distribution to approximate the other.
So these Talleyrand inequalities are saying the cost of moving between distributions,
the Wasserstein distance,
is linked somehow to how different they are in terms of information.
Precisely. It bounds the Wasserstein distance by the relative entropy, often with some constant factor.
And what's really exciting about the research we're looking at today is how it extends this whole concentration idea, something we already knew applied to simpler systems.
Like stochastic differential equations, SDEs.
Right, SDEs.
Yeah.
It extends it to these much more complex SPDEs. It's like going from understanding maybe a single violin to trying to grasp the dynamics of a whole complex interacting orchestra.
That's a great way to put it. And the specific type of SPDE this research focuses on is a parabolic SPDE driven by space-time white noise.
Space-time white noise. That sounds intense, not just regular noise.
No, definitely not. Think of it as random fluctuations that are completely uncorrelated, completely independent at every single point in space and every single moment in time.
Wow.
It's a very raw, very, let's say, singular kind of randomness, a generalized Gaussian field, technically.
Right. And these SPDEs, they don't just float freely, do they? They have initial conditions.
Exactly. A starting state U0 and also boundary conditions, what's happening at the edges of the domain we're considering.
And those boundaries could be different types.
Yeah. They looked at homogeneous Dirichlet, where the solution is forced to be zero at the boundary.
Okay, fixed edges.
Or homogeneous Neumann, where there's no flow across the boundary, like an insulated edge. Or even periodic conditions where the edges wrap around.
Like Pac-Man?
Sort of, yeah, mathematically anyway.
And there's an operator involved.
L. Yes, a differential operator L that describes the underlying deterministic dynamics, like diffusion. It has coefficients A and B.
And assumptions are made about those.
Reasonable ones, yes. Things about smoothness and boundedness to ensure the problem is well posed. Importantly, these SPDEs often have nonlinear terms, too.
Nonlinearities. That always makes things trickier.
It does. Here, they involve functions denoted psi, and g multiplies the noise term, and y is often a reaction term. These mean the system's behavior can depend on its own state in complicated ways.
So how do they handle that? A assume they're well-behaved.
Basically,
right?
Yes. They assume these functions, Angie, are Lipschitz continuous, meaning they don't change too abruptly and that size is also bounded. It doesn't grow infinitely large.
Okay, so we have these potentially very complex SPDEs driven by this extremely erratic space-time white noise with specific start and edge rules and these possibly tricky nonlinear bits. How do we even talk about a solution, UPX, in that kind of setup? Is it a function in the usual sense?
That's a really crucial question. Usually, no, it's not a nice, smooth function pointwise. Instead, the solution is understood in what's called a mild sense.
A mild sense?
Yeah. Think of it not as a perfectly sharp picture, but maybe a slightly blurry, yet still well-defined representation of the overall behavior. The noise is just too rough for classical solutions.
So how is it defined mathematically?
It's defined using an integral equation. This equation involves something called the heat kernel, G, associated with the operator L.
The heat kernel?
Yeah.
That describes how heat spreads, right, or how influence propagates.
Exactly. It captures how an initial disturbance, or the ongoing noise input, spreads through the system over time and space. The mild solution basically sums up the influence of the initial condition and the accumulated effects of the noise and the nonlinear terms, all weighted appropriately by this heat kernel.
Okay, that makes sense. So we define the solution via this integral equation. Now, what did this research find about the concentration of measure for these kinds of solutions?
They presented two main results, informally stated. First, if you look at the law, the probability distribution of the solution.
As a whole thing over space and time.
Yes, viewed as an element in a function space called L0TAA0D. This space essentially measures the solution's average size or energy over the whole time interval 0T and spatial domain 0D.
Okay.
The first result is that this law, this probability measure P on the Ellsworth space, concentrates.
Meaning it's tightly clustered around some average behavior in that Ellsworth sense.
Exactly. The probability of the solution deviating significantly from its typical behavior, just in terms of its overall L size, drops off rapidly.
Interesting. And the second finding?
The second one is quite a bit stronger, but under a more restrictive condition. If that function, the one multiplying the noise term.
The one we assumed was Lipschitz and bounded earlier.
Right. If that happens to be just a constant value, so the noise intensity is uniform everywhere,
okay,
then the law P of the solution concentrates not just in Ellsil, but as a measure on the space of continuous functions, C0TODD.
Ah, so not just concentration of the overall size, but concentration of the actual paths, the trajectories. They tend to be close to some typical continuous path.
Precisely. It implies the solution paths themselves are likely to be close to each other in the sense of uniform convergence, which is a much stronger notion than just being close in LO a lot.
That is a significant difference. So how do they actually prove these concentration results? You mentioned the Talagrad inequalities.
Yes, they established that the law P of the SPDE solution satisfies these Talagrad concentration inequalities, TCIs. As we touched on, TCIs provide that quantitative link between the Wasserstein distance and relative entropy.
Right. Can we maybe formalize that TCI definition a bit more?
Sure. A probability measure Q1 is said to satisfy a TCI of order P with constant C, often written as TPC, if for any other probability measure, Q2.
Any other one.
Any other one that's absolutely continuous with respect to Q1. Then the Wasserstein distance of order P between Q1 and Q2 raised to the power P is less than or equal to C times the relative entropy of Q2 with respect to Q1.
So mathematically, WP Q1 Q2 PA CH Q2 Q1.
Exactly. WAP is the Wasserstein distance. H is the relative entropy, also called Kullback-Leibler divergence.
And why is satisfying this inequality useful? You mentioned sub-Gaussian tails before.
Yes, particularly for P1. If a measure satisfies T1C, it implies it has sub-Gaussian tails. That means the probability of large deviations from the mean decays at least as fast as EXC, which is characteristic of Gaussian-like concentration. It's a strong sign of being tightly packed.
Okay. And the paper mentioned something about T2C having a tensorization property. What's that about?
Ah, yes. T2C is the class of measures satisfying the inequality for P2. The tensorization property is really important. It basically says if you have two independent random variables and their individual laws both satisfy T2C with the same constant C,
okay,
then the joint law of the pair also satisfies T2C with that same constant C.
So it behaves well when you combine independent systems.
Extremely well. It means concentration properties compose nicely for independent components, which is very powerful in probability theory, especially when dealing with high-dimensional problems, which can often be seen as combinations of simpler parts.
Makes sense. So getting back to the SPDEs, what are the specific TCI theorems they proved?
Okay, so theorem 2.1 deals with that special case where os is constant.
The one that gives concentration in the space of continuous functions.
Exactly. It states that under appropriate conditions on the operator L and the nonlinearity G, the law P of the solution U, viewed on C0, TA0D, satisfies a T2 C0 inequality.
T2, so order 2, and C here is the constant.
Yes, and they give an explicit formula for this constant CD. It depends on properties of the heat kernel G, the Lipschitz constant of G, which measures how sensitive G is, and the time horizon T.
So a quantitative bound in that nice continuous setting. What about the general case when C isn't constant?
That's theorem 2.2. For the general case where OSI is just Lipschitz and bounded, the result is for the law P viewed on the L law space, L0 TA0D.
Back to the average size space.
Right. The theorem says P satisfies a T2 C2 at inequality for any EBBD between 1 and 2. The constant C2 here is more complicated.
Expectedly.
It depends on the Lipschitz constant of SEC. It's bound some technical properties of the heat kernel related to integrability, denoted GT and GT, and again, the Lipschitz constant of G, LG. There's also another parameter bound involved related to LG.
So even in the general case, we get a T2 inequality, which is good because of that tensorization property. But the constant is more complex and the result holds in LDU, not necessarily C.
Precisely. These theorems provide concrete quantitative bounds on how concentrated the SPDE solutions are.
What are the main mathematical tools they use to actually prove these theorems? You mentioned Gersonoff earlier.
Yes, the Gersonoff theorem is absolutely key. Fundamentally, Gersonoff's theorem gives you a way to change the underlying probability measure for a stochastic process.
Like switching the odds?
Sort of. You can change the measure from, say, P to an equivalent measure Q, meaning they agree on which events have zero probability. And the theorem tells you how the stochastic process behaves under Q. Typically, a drift term appears.
How does that help here?
Lemma 3.1 in the paper provides a specific Gersonoff representation for these SPDEs driven by space-time white noise. It shows how to relate the original measure P to another measure Q using a certain stochastic process X. It gives an explicit formula for the radon-nicodym derivative, dQ-dP, which tells you the ratio of probabilities. This derivative involves an exponential of a stochastic integral with respect to the white noise, where the integrand is related to this process X.
And connecting this back to the TCI.
The connection comes because the relative entropy, HQP, can be directly calculated from this radon-nicodym derivative, and specifically, it relates to the expectation of the square of that process X under the new measure Q.
I see.
So by choosing Q appropriately, often related to perturbing the original SPDE solution, they can relate the Wasserstein distance between P and Q, which measures the cost of the perturbation, to the relative entropy HQP. Mm-hmm. And the Gersonoff theorem lets them express that entropy in terms of the process X, which is tied back to the parameters of the SPDE. It's quite intricate.
It sounds it. And there was another theorem mentioned, Martingale representation.
Right. The Martingale representation theorem for space-time white noise, that's lemma 4.1 in their appendix. It's a more foundational result needed to actually prove the Gersonoff lemma works correctly in this infinite dimensional white noise setting.
What does it say, roughly?
It essentially says that any reasonably well-behaved random process that evolves based on the history of the white noise, specifically any continuous square integrable martingale adapted to the noise filtration, can be written as a stochastic integral with respect to that same white noise.
So anything driven by the noise can be represented using the noise itself.
An integral form, yes. It guarantees that the kinds of processes that appear in the Gersonoff change of measure, X for instance, can indeed be represented as integrals against the white noise, which is necessary for the whole framework to hold together. It's a technical underpinning.
Makes sense. It sounds like this work didn't come out of nowhere. How does it connect to what was known before?
Absolutely. It builds on a significant body of work. The authors mentioned that concentration of measure was already studied for simpler SDEs and also for SPDEs driven by more regular, smoother noise with some spatial or temporal correlation, not the extreme roughness of space-time white noise.
So this is pushing into rougher territory.
Exactly. They also acknowledge a related paper that independently proved a transportation cost inequality for the stochastic heat equation, a specific type of SPDE, with space-time white noise. They suggest their work might be more general or focus on different aspects, and importantly, they emphasize that they provide explicit constants for the inequalities.
That explicitness is often very valuable. What about looking forward? Where might this research lead?
The authors themselves point to a few natural extensions. One is trying to get similar results for SBDEs in higher spatial dimensions, say 2D or 3D domains. The behavior of SBDEs changes significantly with dimension, often requiring different function spaces, like Sobolev spaces, which measure smoothness differently.
Okay, higher dimensions. Anything else?
Another direction is looking at SBDEs driven by colored noise. That's noise that does have correlations in space or time, unlike white noise. This is often more realistic for physical modeling, but adds another layer of analytical difficulty.
So plenty more challenges ahead.
Definitely.
Okay, so to sort of wrap up, this research really marks a solid step forward in understanding the probabilistic behavior of these very complex SBDEs, especially when they're hit with this maximally unpredictable space-time white noise.
That's right. Showing that their solutions still exhibit this concentration phenomenon and quantifying it using these powerful Talleyrand inequalities is a significant contribution. It connects ideas from optimal transport and information theory directly to the analysis of these equations.
And that's crucial because these SBDEs model so many real-world things, right? Fluid dynamics, material science, neuroscience, finance.
A huge range, yes. So understanding their fundamental probabilistic properties like concentration gives us deeper insights into the stability, the predictability, and the overall behavior of these complex systems.
And presumably, this theoretical understanding isn't just for mathematicians. It could filter down.
Oh, absolutely. For instance, knowing how concentrated the solutions are could help in designing more robust and efficient numerical methods for simulating them. Or it might help us better estimate the probability of rare but impactful extreme events governed by these equations.
This has been a really illuminating discussion. It's quite amazing how these deep mathematical ideas give us a lens to understand systems that seem almost purely random on the surface.
It is. The interplay between probability, analysis, and the applications is really fertile ground. And it leaves us with a question, perhaps for you, the listener, to think about. How might these quantitative concentration inequalities, these bounds on how spread out the solutions can be, actually be leveraged? Could they help develop more reliable methods for, say, generating audio summaries or forecasts based on SBDE models, or maybe lead to better strategies for managing the risks inherent in the phenomena they describe? It's definitely an area where theory meets practice with exciting potential. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.